Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, welcome to Objection to the Rule, live from Radio Free Brooklyn. We're here, it's Sunday, and we've got some news and interviews to share with you. I'm Violet, your host here in the studio with my co-host Raymond. How you doing, Raymond?
Hey, everybody, how's it going?
And we should have Koichi, our interview guest, here on the phone line. Koichi, are you there?
Hey, I'm here.
Great. Thanks for joining us. So we've got an interesting lineup for you today. First, we're going to talk to Koichi about what it's like to be a parent in New York City and how the cities are and are not set up to support working parents, which is a topic we haven't talked about as much on the show, but it's definitely prominent on everyone's minds if they have children or if they're planning families in the city. Before we get started on that, how has everybody's weekend been? How you guys doing?
I've been okay. I had a quite a terrifying last maybe 18 hours. I lost my new iPhone in a cab, in a yellow cab, so it's not the easy way out, like with Uber,
right,
where you can just contact them and they contact the driver, or like, you know, you can just text the driver. So it was I went through the old school process of tracking. Luckily, I'd paid with the credit card, so
right. They
can track those down. But man, it was a long
that
and terrible.
Sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, it was. It was quite the nightmare. And I didn't get it back until today. I was able to finally link up with the driver
wow. This
morning.
But you did get it back, which is kind of a miracle in itself.
Yeah.
Wow. Koichi, how you doing? How's your weekend been?
I'm doing good. I work weekends, so I don't have, it's not like I have anything interesting to tell you. it's been good.
Cool. Well, in the interest of time, let's get started. Let's hear a little bit from you, Koichi, about your story. First off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I moved to Brooklyn in March of 2017, so I've been here 2 years, and I became a parent in August of 2017, so I have a 16-month-old baby, and
A very cute baby,
yes. And I have, my wife is from Tunisia, and I am from California. And right now I work at LinkedIn as kind of a weekend content editor. And my wife is a social worker at the Arab American Family Support Center. It's based here in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, I've visited there. Excuse me. I've been there with, I used to work with a refugee shelter in Harlem. And there was one of the individuals was coming from Syria seeking asylum. And we did, we took him there and were able to get him a lot of help getting because there's just so much involved in dealing with the, you know, asylum seeking and the paperwork that is involved, and it's can be quite a feat. And so that's a great organization. I've spent some time working with them. That's cool.
I think that's wonderful that you know about them. You know, my wife comes home and she doesn't tell me anything confidential, but she tells me sort of, you know, what kind of things she does to help people. And it's an amazing organization. And if you care about, if listeners care about refugees and immigrants and are upset about the Muslim ban and the Supreme Court upholding
yeah.
it, you know, there's an organization here in Brooklyn that, you know, is a great one to give money to, because what I hear from my wife is that they really are helping people and they really do great work.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you say the name again of the organization?
It's called the Arab American Family Support Center.
Right.
Very nice. And Koichi, you mentioned you have a young son, and that's your first child. So you're still relatively new to the parenting game in New York. What were some things that surprised you, and what's been your experience so far navigating parenting in New York City?
So, you know, the thing that I really wanted to talk to you guys about is just, you know, I wanted to just raise awareness on how expensive it's gotten, you know, to be a parent in New York City. So, you know, to have an apartment large enough to have a kid to walk around, it's a challenge finding one. There's, you know, I know that there's affordable housing lotteries for people who, you know, meet the income thresholds, but you have to be like, you have to have like a lower income than the average median income usually.
Yeah, it's
for those, and you have to win a lottery. So it's like two things. You have to be like, you have to be unfortunate and super lucky. And I don't know, you know, how many people get there, but that's, that's not, you know, a recipe for, that's not a policy solution.
Right.
For you know, a normal New Yorker to be able to afford to live here. And then, you know, so number one, I have to find a place with, that's big enough for a kid. And so I live out in Coney Island, which is, you know, it's not that far out, but it, you know, it's all the way on the southern.
Yeah, it's a decent trek.
Yeah, it's
a trek to get to Manhattan, certainly. Whereas the people in North Brooklyn, you know, it's three stops, and then you're in Manhattan. But you just pay too much to live there for an apartment big enough to have a kid. So that's why I'm in Coney Island. And then the other cost is daycare. So, you know, it's important to have two parents working for any family. We were lucky that I was making enough so that, you know, the first year my wife didn't work, but now she's working, and so now we need daycare. And daycare is a whole nother cost. We pay more than half of what our rent is, and our rent is very high, for daycare. So it's, and we just started. The thing about daycare is that there's long waiting lists for daycares, and that not all daycares are located close to your house. There's only one that's located close to our house. And our son was on the waiting list for 4 months. And then when they called and said, you know, we have a space available, you know, we have to take it or else we go on the back of the waiting list. So whether we're ready for it or not, you know, we have to take it. And so, you know, that's very difficult.
Right, for sure. And it's interesting to me because, you know, these are all serious sort of stumbling blocks just for regular services. But you're not an unusual family. You know, if anything, you have more more things in your going in your favor than some others might, you know.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing that really concerns me is that, you know, we're two working parents. We're making, our household income is, you know, above the median income for a household of two. And so, you know, we're very lucky. We you know, I consider us kind of a middle class, but at the same time, there's so many strains and expenses that if I was anywhere lower, it would be very difficult for me.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's like, there's people who think that people who need to use social services or need to use the city or need to use help are somehow takers, but actually that's not true. You know, the real takers are the people who are charging these high rents and charging these high daycares from average, you know, working people and like making it so hard to afford to live here.
Right.
And so, you know, that's a big concern of mine here.
Right. And do you think your situation, your employment, et cetera, helps with this mix of challenges in New York, or do you think it's sort of adding to them?
My employment?
Yeah, your job, your wife's job, where you choose to live, et cetera.
Well, you know, I carefully, you know, God picked my job, and my wife carefully picked her job, and we picked the place where we live very carefully.
Right.
It doesn't, you know, our choices were the best choices for what we have.
Right.
There was something I wanted to also talk about, which is where the city delivers 3K services, because I sent you this on a map. You have to pay for a daycare up until your kid is 3 years old in some places, and up until your kid is 4 years old in other places. You can't get into 3K. The city's implementing a universal 3K program, but it's nowhere close to universal. Anybody can apply for 3K, but there's only certain districts that are getting universal 3K now, and they're nowhere close to Coney Island. So I sent you a map of where they are, and basically there's 3K. So when, you know, this is for the future. My son is not even 1.5 yet, but when he turns 3, it's almost impossible for us to go and take him to a free city-administered 3K,
right,
because they're in Bushwick and off in Oceans. They're like East New York, and but they're in places that are kind of off the beaten path for someone in Coney Island. They're not, you know, conveniently located by subways from Coney Island to get to them. And, you know, why would you want to go so far out to Bushwick if you live in Coney Island for your kid to get 3K?
And how can you know, if you've got a full schedule, how can you get your kid there anyway?
You really can't.
Right.
Yeah, you really can't.
Brooklyn is Brooklyn.
Right.
You know, and not seeing it is different.
It's a massive piece of space. Koichi, I'm also curious, you know, I know you've had experience living in other cities and even other countries. Do you think this is sort of a situation unique to New York? Do you think New York is especially hard?
Well, okay, so New York definitely, in terms of rent, you know, the housing crisis here in New York is just outrageous. So, you know, I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area before, but it's like my parents bought a house there 25 years ago, so the housing crisis wasn't as pronounced when they bought.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't as affected, you know, growing up there, because, you know, the economy was totally different in the early 90s in the San Francisco Bay Area than it is now. So now, you know, San Francisco and New York really have you know, a huge housing problem. It's definitely a matter of supply and demand for housing. So that drives up the prices here and makes it very difficult for ordinary families.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about your income and yours and your wife's dual income, and it seems like it should be a really comfortable and secure setup.
It should be enough.
And yet you find yourself in a place where if anything goes wrong, any kind of medical emergency, God forbid, or, you know, some kind of extra expense that you weren't planning. And these things happen in regular people's lives all the time. If one thing happens, it can totally screw you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, like I said, anybody lower than me would have a really, really hard time if there was one of those life events that screwed them.
Yeah.
So, you know, people are really, I don't know how people do it, but, you know, it really feels like you could be close. Yeah, I'm not living on the edge, but, like, there are people who could be most people in New York who want to survive here, you know, if they haven't been here a long time in a rent-stabilized apartment or something like that. You know, with the costs, if you move here recently, the costs are just so high that you really do feel like you could be living on the edge.
Yeah, certainly. Koichi, I wonder if there are, if you have any thoughts, you know, you've lived this situation for a little over a year now. What are some ways the city could lessen the burdens on young parents? What should the city be doing that it's sort of not right now?
Well, I mean, you know, I really want to just make a pitch for more districts with universal 3K, and you know, expanding. So the HRA is another, you know, the HRA and the services that they provide for daycare vouchers, that's a whole nother political issue. And you don't qualify for daycare vouchers unless you qualify for all public assistance. Wow. And to qualify for public assistance, you have to be very, very poor.
Right.
You have to have very, very low income. So, you know, the city can do two things. They could raise the income requirements for getting daycare vouchers, just daycare, so that if you have a new baby and you want, you know, you want both parents working, because this is, that, you know, people come to New York to get jobs here. They don't come here to get to, for the weather, because the weather's terrible.
Yeah.
They come, you know, people come here for jobs. So you want both parents working. So, you know, what they can do is they could expand the number of school districts here in Brooklyn who offer universal 3K. They could also raise the limits for receiving daycare vouchers and the types of assistance that they provide people to qualify for daycare vouchers, because it makes no sense, you know, what they're charging. And by telling people who can't afford, you know, the very, very high cost of daycare, or maybe even if you can, telling people that, well, you can afford it, so, you know, you should be spending this money on this. I'm actually, you know, on an annualized basis, I'm spending more money on daycare than I spent on my 1 year of daycare is more expensive than what I spent for 4 years of an undergraduate degree.
Oh, you're kidding.
At UC Santa Cruz, at a state school. But I went back, you know, I graduated in 2006. I'm a little older, so now California has gotten really expensive, and you know, an undergraduate degree is much more. But for me, I borrowed and paid off less than what I pay on an annualized basis for daycare for my baby.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and so you know, it's like if I save now. If I were to save the money that I spend on daycare as a middle-class person, then I, you know, I could send my kid, and I just invested it and put it in a Vanguard fund or something like that and just left it there for 18 years. My kid could go to a really good college because something like that compounding over, you know, 18 years, it would give, you know, a great return.
Right.
So, you know, I'm thinking, you know, why am I spending all this money up front just to, like, live in such an expensive city?
Is the juice worth the squeeze? I'm interested to see what the mayor does. We've seen a lot of really progressive things happening here.
Yeah.
You know, and so it would be cool to see some movement on the frontier with families, working families. And with, you know, especially with young children and what's going on with that, you know, we've seen the universal health care that they're pushing through and everything.
Bill.
Same thing with glasses. I think that young kids, free glasses for, I think it's under five.
Right. Possibly. Should be a no-brainer about child care in the city as well.
So yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, we gotta get plugged in with the city council and start talking to our representatives.
Right.
Anyone who's listening, if you're in New York, start calling. We get this ball moving.
Yeah.
Right.
The new thing is that, you know, he added two new school districts that are offering the universal 3K for the 2019-2020 year.
Yeah.
But he only added two. You know, the city needs to be adding these districts much quicker.
Right.
And it still, you know, to me, it boggles my mind as to why the districts are not central places next to transportation, because the people who live in the districts have priority enrollment to get into the 3K, but anybody can apply. So you would want districts that are sent in central transportation areas so that anybody who applies outside of those districts could easily get to them and send their kids to 3K there, but they haven't even done that. Mm. Right. They're more peripheral school districts that are offering the service, and so that's something that I hope City Hall thinks about.
Right. Well, Koichi, this is such a good window into something that we haven't discussed as much, but it's so important, so we really appreciate you taking out the time from your workday on a Sunday to speak with us. Is there anything else you want to mention or tell listeners that's going on?
Just continue supporting Radio Free Brooklyn. I love what you're doing. Keep up the good work and keep listening.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. And how can people follow you? Do you have social media that you want to share?
Yeah. So I'm at WhiteWillow64 on Twitter. So I always like more Twitter followers. So.
All right. At WhiteWillow64. And we can post that when we post the show. Great. Thank you so
much. Yeah. My name is Koichi Shirayanagi. And nobody over the phone can ever write out Shirayanagi because it's a long Japanese last name.
Yeah.
But it means white willow in Japanese.
Oh.
And everybody knows how to spell white willow. So
okay.
That's where that comes from.
Cool.
Perfect.
All right. Well, have a good rest of your day, and we hope to speak to you again on Radio Free Brooklyn. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. Thank you very much for listening to that interview, and thanks to Koichi for sharing with us. We're going to have a quick music break, and then we'll go right into national news right here on Radio Free Brooklyn. Keep listening.
Chillin', layin' in the cut though, easy, tryin' to see what up though, Brooklyn. Home of the cutthroats, notorious, y'all know how the rest go sleeping. One eye open, too smart cause I'm always scoping, watching, seeing how these lames look, lazy. This how you get your frame took, money, I got money. Money, I got money. Talking, always talking. That's your problem, you always talking. Rockstar, mixed with a ghetto chick. Try me, I wish it would chola. Who gon' hold us? Not the cemetery or the penitentiary. Damn, my contemporaries, I'm too legendary. It's so money, I got money. Money, I got money. I'm money. Grind and hustle, I had to work like Kobe just to shine like Russell. They say, glad you made it happen overnight. They say, damn, you changed. I'm like, show you right. I've
in the crib, trying to find the BPM. Rehearsing for the next show in my kitchen. Fresh off for tour, but can't tell you where I've been. Maybe after 20 years, I'll start to take it in. Right now, I'm chasing in, Dover Street again. I'm introverted, I'm not open to new friends. But if you're real cute, then I have to think again. Shop the runway so you can stay off trend and look like
money. Money. Grind and hustle, I had to work like Kobe just to shine like Russell. They say, glad you made it happen overnight. They say, damn, you changed.
Yo, you right. I got money. I got money.
Ooh.
Money. I got money.
Ooh.
I'm money. I got money.
Ooh.
Money. I got money.
Ooh.
That was Money by Lee Kelly 47.
That was awesome.
Got some good, I think it's really the RFB vibe, you know?
Yeah.
Either you got money or you sing about it.
And what's the difference? What's the real difference?
Right. Yeah, we're all here to have fun. Raymond, you got some serious and surprising national news for us this week.
I mean, it's just all over the place. You try to nail down what's happening nationally, and you can't even keep up at this point.
Yeah.
It's been a constant flow of just trying to shock everyone as much as possible with this administration. So we're in our 23rd day of the partial government shutdown, with 800 federal employees either on furlough or not working at all, but none of them receiving paychecks, including the TSA, the Coast Guard. This is a historic shutdown now with the longest ever shutdown in the history of the United States, with no end in sight. We all know that it's coming down between the wall, funding for the wall and or not. President Trump refuses to sign any spending bills whatsoever that don't include money for the wall. What makes this really abnormal is that he does have bills that he's not, when he signs these continuing resolutions or the bills that will fund the government at least until they figure out what to do with the wall, when he signs that, he's not saying, that's not some kind of agreement that it's like, okay, this is the budget and it doesn't include funding for the wall. It is, this is this part of the budget
right. We
need so that the government can continue to function, and we'll figure out the wall as we move on down the road. Now, because of that, it came out today in USA Today that the American people are largely blaming Donald Trump for the shutdown.
And he's owning it,
mm-hmm.
too.
59% blaming Donald Trump for the shutdown. 53% that are blaming Donald Trump for the shutdown, 29% blaming the Democrats. It's a large margin. And so it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. They're saying that Trump wants to declare a state of national emergency,
right,
to get the funding for the wall, which would mean diverting funds from funds that were supposed to be going to Texas and to Florida,
right,
and to California.
Actual national disasters.
Which I don't see him doing, because we've got Rubio and Ted Cruz in these states who are going to say, no, you're not taking, we've got to figure out a different solution. That's why the GOP is also just all up in arms about this and trying to figure out what to do. While Mitch McConnell, the Speaker of the Senate Majority Leader in the Senate, he just sits on his hands. Everyone's asking for some kind of movement, and Mitch McConnell refuses. He's sticking with what Trump said, and he refuses to put anything to a vote that doesn't include money for the wall.
Right. It's hard, you know, even this just feels like such a collapse of our system. You know, it feels in some ways that 2016 election and everything that we saw after that was leading in some ways up to this. Just government not functioning, you know, and no end in sight. And we're all at the mercy of one man, you know?
Yeah.
It's not simply Trump, because I believe the Senate could force through a bill.
Absolutely.
And overrule his veto.
And have the votes overrule the veto.
That's right. But, there's a system behind him, and it's working behind him, and Americans are suffering because of that.
And really, he's in the position to where, I mean, I think part of it is because Mitch McConnell knows that just by being the president of the United States, the seat alone, the office alone, gives so much power to an individual. And the big mistake was allowing it to get to the point where Donald Trump was in the office of the presidency.
Right.
Because there's a lot less that you can do. Although Congress is a separate power and just as powerful as the president's office, it's governed by hundreds of people,
right,
instead of a person. And so it's dangerous and really unprecedented waters to tread, if that's even an expression. But it feels like it. It just feels like we're getting to this place, and now more and more news is coming out. We find out that the FBI opened up an investigation on Donald Trump after he fired Comey and then let it go, essentially because they didn't know how to approach it, because it's the president of the United States and they're essentially saying, we think he's an agent of Russia. Which, by the way, when he was asked yesterday by a friendly journalist, you're not an agent of Russia, right? He couldn't even give a yes or no answer. He just said, that's such an offensive question,
right?
Without giving an answer. And more, like New York Times and Washington Post have been putting out articles the last few days about just what's coming out about Donald Trump. And this is that barrage of just, we can't even catch a breath before we get another article that says that Donald Trump was, you know, passing handwritten notes that nobody else was supposed to see. And he instructed his translator when they were in Helsinki, was it, when they had the meeting with Putin, that he wasn't to share any of the information that was translated on the note from Putin to Donald Trump. Literally no one in the White House except for Donald Trump and that translator knew what was on that paper.
Right.
And this is just all, it's all questionable, it's all shady, and we're finding it out just more and more and more and more. The Mueller investigation is supposed to be wrapping up soon. It's going to be interesting because we've gotten little windows of what's going on in there now, from not properly redacting something, or it's not a big leak system. So actually that came out of the Manafort side.
Right.
Mueller's team doesn't leak anything, but which is, again, even more interesting. What's going on? What are we going to find out? We already know that it's likely going to be a lot, and there's no way to even guess.
Right. And, you know, I think that's been a pattern for a little while. There's something serious going on with Donald Trump that we should be paying attention to, but there's this massive sideshow. You know,
yeah.
He introduces a bill that he cannot legally pass, but that shocks and, you know, fixates Americans on that.
Yeah.
Now we've got the shutdown, which few of us have any control over, aside from speaking to our representatives, which I have done and plan to keep doing.
Yeah.
But It distracts us from these investigations, which are so important. And the other half of this is, it has real impact. It's a real distraction for Americans. You know, the FDA is inspecting less food. We've seen these articles now about foods to avoid. Some people are recommending avoiding fresh produce until...
Yep.
Anything uncooked, if you can cook it yourself and get it to above, I believe, 160, 165 degrees, it's edible.
Kill off the bacteria.
Kill the bacteria.
Don't count on the government to do it.
Right, you can't count on the government. The overdrawn FDA, now the employees are furloughed. Some of the inspectors aren't showing up to work, mm-hmm. and the other inspectors are distracted by, one article said, by not knowing if they're going to be able to pay for their kids' dental care.
Yeah,
you know?
They don't have a paycheck coming in.
Right.
Coast Guard, members of the Coast Guard,
right.
No paycheck coming in. These are individuals, by the way, people, when we talk about the Coast Guard, this isn't something simple. I know a lot of people like to underplay the importance and how serious they make an oath, though, to the Constitution. It's the same as any other military branch. Their job is very different, and it's very much so a defense mechanism guarding the U.S., and they don't deploy. But they do make an oath, and they commit to upholding the Constitution just like anyone else mm-hmm. in the military or police force or public office. They have an oath to their position, and these people are giving up and sacrificing to be a part of this, this branch
right.
of the military. And now we're not paying them.
We're not paying them.
We're not paying them. And their families are going through Christmas and New Year's
right.
knowing that they're not having any money coming in. They're going to pop up food pantries and garage sales. They're told
right.
to go.
Government
and like
workers.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Government workers who are quite literally putting their lives on the line.
Right. Right.
And for us and our safety and protection, and we're not paying them.
Right. And that's right.
And it's ironic that it has a lot to do with immigration as well. The Coast Guard does a lot with
yeah.
illegal immigration from the seas. And so it's ironic that to get this waste of a wall
right.
that's supposed to be about immigration and helping deal with illegal immigration and criminals coming into the country, essentially, which we don't want, obviously. But in order to get it, we're shutting down like airways, like traffic control. Are we talking about TSA?
Yes.
The Coast Guard, all of these individuals encounter way more illegal immigration.
Right.
And especially
and
the kind that's bad. And they're not getting paid, and many of them aren't coming into work.
Distracted.
How do you just, and how do you convince the American people that this is the right thing to do?
Right. And also, you know, we this is another thing we've talked about less on this show, but it's well known that many Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. They're on the edge. We don't have a lot of financial education in this country as a mandatory thing. And a lot of people just don't have the, you know, the finances to get ahead. Many Americans couldn't put up, you know, a few thousand dollars for an emergency situation. And now those government workers are finding that, you know, this past week was the first missed paycheck for government workers of the new year. And, you know, people are dealing with foreclosure situations.
Foreclosure, they're dealing with having to pull their kids out of school if they go to, you know, we were talking earlier about childcare.
Right.
Can you imagine if he was a federal employee that was on furlough? This is one of those emergencies that I'm talking about, but this is one of them that's in control of our president, and he is pushing this and pushing this, and it's not even just those people. My sister and her husband have five children. They live in a very a poorer part of the country in Arkansas, and they rely on HUD and food stamps right now. Amazing and also sad right now because of how this is affecting them, but they have started to build their way out of this. It can be very difficult, especially in those parts of the country, but they had an opportunity to purchase a business, a granite business, from someone that they know. The government provides special loans for families and individuals, in especially in this situation, if they can prove that they've got a functional business, that they'll provide them a somewhat government-subsidized business loan, but you have to qualify for it as well. You need to have good credit, but you don't have to have these massive down payments or demonstrate what you would regularly opening. So they qualify. They found out that they do qualify and that they're going to be getting it, but they're not going to be getting it until the government is reopened.
Right.
And so that's put on hold until that happens. Also, their HUD payments aren't going to be coming in if this continues to go any further. Their next payment for their household won't be going to them. And the way that works is the government pays the person that owns the house. And so then it'll come down to the person that owns the house to say yay or nay, like, you're not, sorry, the government's not paying your rent. You have to go, or I can wait. It's all right, you know, and be kind, but it's up to them. And food stamps are being reduced. And And this is direct, like, this is all over the country.
Yeah.
All over the country, it's happening to people, you know.
Right, and these are people who worked incredibly hard, I'm sure, to get to the point where they could be in this situation, and now it's just being paused.
Yeah, and a simple shift of this, the amount of change it brings into their life, permanent change. This isn't going to dissipate, and I mean, exactly what Nancy Pelosi said about how Trump thinks that these people can just ask their families or their parents for money, but they can't. They can't. So I don't care if you back pay them, which they're not even certain if they, like, he wasn't even committed to that. But even getting back pay, it doesn't matter. If you go from mid-December to the end of January without getting money, it doesn't matter if they pay you what they owed you. Yeah, you're put in a position where you can't dig yourself out. And we're putting all of these individuals, government workers, everyone in this position, and we're going to have to deal with that. Like, there will be long-term effects of this government shutdown that we aren't even close to understanding yet.
Right. And it's so close to us, you know. You and I don't work for the government, I believe, so we're still going to work and getting paid, but it could easily be different, you know. So many people work for the government.
Yeah.
It's so close to all of us, I think.
It's huge. I want to say there's 300,000 approximately military veterans that are on furlough or are not going into work. These federal employees. I mean, it's a huge percentage of federal employees are veterans anyway, so we're not surprised by that. But it's an incredible number of veterans who work for the government and aren't getting paid or aren't coming into work. And not getting paid, and we're letting them down as well. You know, we're sitting here on our hands.
These are people who we owe as a nation.
Exactly. And so I'm really I'm shocked. I again, like I said at the beginning, we're just, it keeps rolling out. It keeps coming out. Now Trump is saying that he's not committing to ending the shutdown if he gets money for the wall.
Right.
He wants this shutdown. It's like you said, it's a distraction from what's actually going on. You know, next month we've got Michael Cohen going to testify to the in the House of Representatives. They've subpoenaed him before he goes to prison.
Right.
Now he can't talk about what's an ongoing, what's still an ongoing investigation. So he's not going to be able to talk about very much of what he talked to Mueller about. Although he has been the House committee, that's the investigative committee, and he have both been conversing with the Mueller team, making sure that they're completely aware of what can and can't be discussed in these kinds of things. But it doesn't matter. There's tons of material on Trump that Cohen has to basically, you know, just tell us about what else, aside from the fact that he's an agent of Russia. You know, he's cheating American people in all these different ways. And Cohen can talk about it openly now to a committee that's going to ask him, as opposed to what we had before, which was a committee that's like, you know, don't ask, don't tell. They didn't bring him in. They didn't want to talk to him. They didn't ask him tough questions. They didn't require him to tell the truth because it was the GOP that was running it. But now it's the Democrats. And we do have the tools and the power to get the truth now.
Right.
And it's going to be an interesting revelation.
It certainly will. You know, I anticipate the next few months being very difficult for all of us, some of us more than others, but all of us, and it'll certainly be interesting to see what happens. I think we're going to go into national news, take a short break, hear some music, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Now special dedication to all dogs of dogs, dedicated to all top dogs, liberty crew. Man called Tony Kelly, the man called Robert, and while Apache riding through. Curfew! Sometimes a back of some of them a rally back. We a road boy, you tell we no take back no chat. Sometimes a back of some of them a rally back. But we a road boy, you tell we no take back no chat. You full of big chat and can't defend that. If a jailhouse you come from, we sending you go back. You full of big chat and can't defend that. If a Bellevue you come from, we sending you go back. Cause with them they are when they get a run hot. When we look in the food for the pot. Man of him 16 over him back. 45 and we have a rampart. Bazooka and all if it lock. When we move in, we move compact. A man, we take a couple store, couple bank and shop. And police man, a top out we hot. Judge, I know we have to run left this part. Dan Dayati, dog at Sadat. When we come dance, all of it block. Me say some a rally back, a some of them dance back. We a road boy out and we not left it lock. A some a rally back, a some of them dance back. When they kill in the place and the place of it block. Cause with them there when Kingston run hot. When we look in the food for we pot. Kingston with there when mass up get shot. Kingston with there when Kappa get shot. Kingston with there when a bird get shot. Man a Kingston with there when a cow get shot. Sandakan when him lick down flat. Natty Morgan lick down flat. Jungle man Spangle a ream a man did hot. And the uptown man them did hot. And the river town man them run hot. Firehouse man road did hot. And the Pineland man them hot. And back Bushman them did hot. Warwick Hill man them running hot. Nannyville man them did hot. Me say some a rally back and some of them time so back. Them a road boy out way a bus off the clock. Some a rally back and some of them time so back. Me say some of them a fryers and some of them a nuts. Full of pose and enough big chatter. When you buck them can't defend that. Running off them mouth non-stop. Bout them half up the 16 and Glock. And me shot him a cotton boxer. And the boy start run non-stop. Miss a cat on the mic and a chatter. And police come in a jeep back. And them coming from Amman Barracks. And them coming and coming non-stop. And the road boy them firing shot. Bussing the shot them bus it non-stop. Make me tell you them deaf on the attacker. Miss a cat round the mic and a chat. Miss a summer rally back and some of them time so back. We a road boy out and we not left a clock. Summer rally back and some of them time so back. We a road boy out and
no take no back chat. With them there when Kingston run out. When we look in the food for the pot. And guarding poor people at top. When the politics flicks and drop. When the bomber drop on house top. And every morning a dead man and spotter. And the youth them go school show shot. Make me tell you them bend down flat. And school book man it dep on them back. Miss a cat in the yard and a chat. When me chat dance all of a block. Me say some a rally back and some of them dance a back. We a road boy youth and we busting up the Glock. Some a rally back and some of them dance a back. We a road boy youth, we no take no back chat. Full of back chat and can't defend that. But if a jailhouse you come from, we sending you go back. Full of back chat and can't defend that. And if a Bellevue you come from, we sending you go back. Where them there when Kingston run out. When we licking the sixpence and Glock. Warwick a ill man no take back chat. Jungle man them no take back chat. Garden man them no take back chat. Rima man them no take back chat.
That was Ghetto Red Hot by Red Cat, a dance hall classic throwback. So now we're going to get into international news. But first, did you know that you can listen to us mobily? You don't have to listen just on your computer. You can listen on your iPad, on your or your phone, Android and iPhone. We have Radio Free Brooklyn app that streams live all of our shows. And you can also listen to our archives by going to podomatic.com or radiofreebrooklyn.org has our latest. So let's hear a little bit about international news. True to his word during the campaign and early presidency, Donald Trump is pulling the U.S. out of Syria, although the specifics of that move still aren't clear, even as the process has already begun. We've removed some equipment from the country, and we may be temporarily increasing troops to protect those who are leaving. While Trump has said that the U.S. would be out in 30 days, that's not happening. And his national security advisor, John Bolton, said it could be months or years. So when we think about a time frame for this, how likely is it that we're going to see real troops moving out in the next few months?
In my opinion, based off of just reading the writing on the wall, and especially with what I know about military tactical movements, this is like strategic, like long-term plans. It's not going to happen. It isn't a thing. Trump spoke too soon. Everyone with the Pentagon was like not supporting his statement from the very beginning.
Right.
As you pointed out, we aren't even reducing the numbers. They're removing some equipment, but let's be real, people. Like, equipment in these kinds of conflicts are constantly moving.
Right.
They're pulling things in and out and bringing in new stuff and taking out old stuff and moving equipment because the equipment is assigned to the unit.
Right.
And so if a unit transitions out, then a new unit transitions in. They take their equipment with them. And so it's all just a bunch of bullshit. I'm sorry, but it's just not like we aren't months or even years.
Right.
So this is the Secretary of Defense.
Right.
Right, so
or this, who should have the most information?
It's not something that you talk about either. When I saw that tweet that was talking about pulling us out of Syria, it's like you don't discuss these kinds of things on the open air. We spend billions of dollars every year just to protect our communications. Like, the amount of money that we spend to protect our communications over the airways is absurd, but we have to because we need to be able to communicate and make decisions about how we're going to move our troops, where we're going to position our troops without enemy forces capturing that and knowing our moves.
Right.
So the president tweeting about pulling troops out of Syria is one of the, A, it's dangerous, B, it's completely lacking in any kind of strategy whatsoever.
Right.
And it just demonstrates how ignorant he is when it comes to commander-in-chief responsibilities.
Right.
Even
right.
The simplest ones, like don't tell people where your troops are.
Right.
You know?
And his military leadership expressed shock and some resigned as a result of that. Yes.
Many.
And you know, I remember when Obama was first putting people in Syria at earlier in the ISIS crisis and the Syrian war. And they said there would be no boots on the ground in Syria, even as we were getting reports of all these soldiers coming in, military personnel. So people were saying, well, that obviously means either they won't be wearing boots or they won't be touching the ground.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly, because like, their lives are there.
Right, right. So, and I think it's a similar thing. You know, even if we're supposedly taking everyone out, I think we would probably still have a presence there.
Absolutely. They've spent so much money on developing these posts and developing our presence in these countries. Right. And it's not just because of ISIS. There are all kinds of interests wrapped up in this conflict, and especially that of the U.S.
Right.
And so there's a lot more involved than just defeating ISIS in why we're there as well. And to make a hardline decision of, okay, you know what, never mind, we're not doing this anymore, it's not just about effective reduction in numbers. It's not just about safety. It's wrapped. That decision would have an effect on our relationship with so many nations, because of how there's just the process of us getting involved and all the different variables when it comes to Saudi Arabia, when it comes to Russia,
right.
When it comes to Ukraine, when it comes to nations across the Middle East as well. Regardless of whether or not we think we have a good or bad relationship with these nations, the last thing we want to do is continue to further harm any relationships that we have, and this would only serve that purpose.
Right.
We want out. The American people want to reduce the numbers. Don't get me wrong. It's not some kind of excuse to stay. It's about doing it properly and safely.
Right. Next up, we have another caravan of migrants. As we're, in the midst of this wall debate, as the migrants are, the caravan, which is the second in recent months, people heading up through Mexico to the United States from Central America. There's another one headed here. They're reportedly planning to head northward, leaving Honduras next week. This coming week, and beginning the journey through Mexico into the United States. As our own government shutdown carries on, Trump attempted to use this new caravan as further reason to rally his supporters behind a border wall. Whenever I hear about another caravan, I don't think of it as, a current policy issue. It seems more like a human migration issue.
Yeah.
And something that we're going to have to, not just the U.S., but the international community is going to have to address.
It is a crisis, too.
Right.
Actually,
it's a human crisis.
Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, funnily enough, he tweeted about this caravan. I can't figure this guy out, right? I see him with some of the most, ridiculous propaganda public statements where I'm like, how can you say this and then also say this? So sometimes I'm like, will you shut your stupid mouth, Marco Rubio? But also sometimes I'm like, how are you aligning with the messaging of the Democrats?
Right.
Because he's basically tweeted, he was like, there's another caravan. We found out there's another caravan coming together in Honduras it was in Honduras?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so in Honduras and... which makes it clear that this is very much so a crisis, but it is a humanitarian crisis that we need to address before it becomes chaotic and they arrive and we haven't worked out with the rest of, the international, the UN or wherever they go with this to deal with global crisis.
Right.
We need to be linking up with these people. By the way, these relationships, which Trump has worked very hard to destroy.
Right.
We need those relationships now because we need to be working with these nations to figure out how to deal with this global humanitarian crisis. And instead, Trump's solution is like, fuck it and fuck everyone else in the world and we're going to build a wall.
Right.
That's what's going to keep them from coming in here. It's y'all's problem. It's y'all's problem. And wasting money and shutting down the government for it when this is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't be afraid. This isn't an invasion. which is so stupid that they continue to try and frame it that way, because people aren't buying. It's not an invasion. Right. These are families.
Right. Women and children.
Yeah. LGBTQ, you know, and individuals who are running away from oppression and violence in their nation, or whether it's economic oppression or some, legal or however.
Right.
But they're running from these things. They need asylum. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of nations that they can get it from, and one of them being the U.S., but we have to plan this with other nations, leadership to figure out how to deal with this humanitarian crisis.
Right, and it's not a problem that's new or that just popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah, we knew it.
Right, and it's tied up in our own history, you know, our history of colonization, history of imperial power throughout you know, the Americas. The U.S. had a hand in a lot of government and military policy in Central and South America historically. And the instability that's happening now has something to do with us. Mm-hmm. So we need to understand that, because the problem isn't going away. You know, even if we build a wall, there will still be people coming to it.
Yeah. And also the wall is going to make it more difficult for these individuals, these refugees, mm-hmm. That are seeking asylum, right. And make it easier for individuals who are coming in ports of entry with nefarious intentions.
Right.
Which, you know, again, we're like, it's all about what you look like, really, is what it comes down to. This mm-hmm. is a racist issue of, we don't want these dirty brown people in our country. Right. That's the message that they're selling. And they're allowing people to excuse their own racial bias mm-hmm. and their own racism. I want to start using that word more and not call it like racially charged or racial bias. They're able to excuse their own racism by saying, well, it's for our safety. Mm-hmm. These people are dangerous. Immigrants are this, 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 and this. And they're ignoring the data. They're ignoring what we know, which is that there are dangerous people that immigrate to the United States. Mm-hmm. There is illegal immigration that right. harms our economy, and there are drugs yeah. that are coming in. But guess where it's not happening? Mm-hmm. At the port of entry that we're trying to spend billions and billions of dollars on securing awesome. Further with physical barriers. It's not coming in there. Mm-hmm. And so that information is out there. People should be able to know it. But instead, we've got a racist federal... You know, we've got a racist White House administration, essentially, right. that is peddling a racist narrative that allows the racists in this nation to continue to excuse their racism.
Right.
How many times can you say racist in one sentence?
Like, right. It's true.
But that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it is true. We'll have to see what our government will do, because, you know, it's... As you said, it's not going away. It's going to get worse, and I think it's going to manifest in different forms.
The economic thing that we're facing across the world, one of the big reasons that these caravans are developing, because really everybody has problems, and when you destroy the economy, the ones that are at the lowest rung, they're left without options.
Right.
When you affect their money so much so that now they're like, we have to get out of here, because not only are we facing oppression, but we've got to deal with this economic issue.
Right.
That's a global issue that the UN and the G7 and the G20 have been facing and trying to deal with for years now.
Right.
And Trump getting in there and just kind of throwing a wrench in everything was a big reason why there was so much of a problem with him and the G7 and
Definitely.
Them not working together, because
yeah.
we have a global economic crisis that we're not dealing with.
Well, we're all out of time this week for a discussion of crises, but we look forward to discussing next week's crisis with you.
we'll be there.
Same time, same place, Radio Free Brooklyn. Next up is What is Love with Sasha Sugar. We look forward to seeing you next week.
Awesome. See everyone.